Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Hey, pull up a chair. It's Hacks on Tap with David Axelrod, Robert Gibbs, and Mike Murphy.
They indicted me. In other words, whatever documents a president decides to take with him, he has the absolute and unquestioned right to do so. This is a law that was passed and signed. And that's the law, and that's the way it is, and it couldn't be more clear.
They did indeed indict him, Robert Gibbs. That is a fact. And apparently, they may indict him again.
I understand we have breaking news this morning, X.
Yes. A little breaking news music there, Jeff. All right. Okay. And who better to discuss breaking news with than the one, the only, the host of Inside Politics at CNN, our friend Dana Bash. Dana, good to see
Hi,
you.
Hi, guys.
It's so what's what is happening here? It's another day, another looming indictment. What's going on?
What's going on is that the former president put on his social media platform that he has received a target letter from the special counsel, Jack Smith, specifically about what happened on January 6th. Do you want me to read what he said on Truth Social?
Yes.
Okay. Please. Okay. Deranged Jack Smith, the prosecutor with Joe Biden's DOJ, sent a letter, parentheses, again, it was Sunday night, exclamation point, end parentheses, stating that I am a target, all caps, of the January 6th grand jury investigation and giving me a very short 4 days to report to the grand jury, which almost always means an arrest and indictment. There you go.
Yeah.
It's pretty big news.
It's a good thing that in that previous segment, he understands that indictment is clear because it sounds like he understands exactly what's about to go down.
Well, when you've had it happen before.
Yeah, he knows the routine.
Yeah, exactly.
And guys, here's the interesting thing. You'd think these, as we said, these indictments would hurt, but Trump has set up this construct where they become symbols of his defiance on behalf of his aggrieved followers. Let's listen to another clip from that same conference over the weekend.
Every time the radical left Democrats, Marxists, communists, and fascists indict me, I consider it to be a great badge of honor and courage. I'm doing it for you. I'm being indicted for you. Better me than you, right?
And he said what he said many times before now, which is, you know, they're coming after me because they're coming after you. Better me than you. I'm doing this for you.
It's a shield.
So, Robert, yep. If you want to write him a thank you note, I think he's at Bedminster this this summer. But Dana, I think we underestimate the power of his message. And the real question is, how many bricks can you put on this load? And do they actually strengthen him? Each indictment a certification of the viciousness with which he's being pursued in his own estimation? Or do people say, this is one brick too much for the low?
It depends which people you're talking about, as you both well know. But it does feel as though it's about bricks, and it's about the cumulative effect that you're describing with that metaphor. But it's also this specific issue. There was New York, there were the documents. This is about the fundamentals of democracy and the question of whether or not the special counsel, the prosecutors, felt as though their case was strong enough, not just to target the lawyers and the people around him selling him the bill of goods, but whether or not it was Donald Trump himself who was pushing this, and the whole question of intent. I mean, I'm just reading a little bit more from our reporting. Prosecutors' decision to send Trump a target letter makes clear prosecutors are focused on Trump's actions in the investigation into overturning the 2020 election and not just those around him who tried to stop his election loss. You know, they have been investigating for quite some time. It has been that open question whether or not they have the goods on Trump. And if you're going to go as far as indicting a former president on something this big, you would think that you have some pretty clear evidence. But
100%. But you said the right thing before, which is it depends on which people. The people I'm focused on right at the moment are the people who are going to vote in that Republican primary. And Gibbs, so far, he has not shown a lot of wear and tear. In fact, you know, I said the other day, maybe when I was on with you, like I don't know whether these bricks are kryptonite or energy packs that they're loading on his wagon there. Do you think this one? You think this one's different?
No, I don't. I mean, let's separate the politics from the judicial. Obviously, in the judicial, this is huge. This is a big earthquake. But in the politics of it, do you imagine the group that he was talking to of the clip you played acting any different as a result of this news than they did when they were clearly cheering out of their minds over the weekend? The answer to that's just no. I mean, he's become strengthened. Yeah. And that rhetorical shield that you talked about is this idea, and it's been this way really since he came down the escalator in 2015, is I'm protecting you against them. And them is any other boogeyman out there that threatens you. And so I think it's a combination of two things. I think he's strengthened. And I think as we get into this discussion, I don't really see a lot of time left in the Republican nomination fight, but it's hard to see right now that somebody is putting together the building blocks to push him off that mantle right now. I just don't see it. I know, and if I've had this argument with Murphy for more than a year, and if he was here, he'd say, but look at the Republican polling that shows all these people that are open to voting for somebody else. Yeah, you still got it. Somebody else has got to be that person, and I just don't see that person right
now. Yeah. I mean, Dana, he's right that if Murphy, and I tease him about it every week, he's a brilliant guy, but I can't tell whether he's speaking with his heart or his head because he's...
Sounds like his heart.
He's trying to recover the Republican Party that I don't know exists anymore.
It doesn't.
But, you know, Trump has brilliantly constructed this race as him versus the deep state, the elites, the people who his base feel is tormenting them. And, you know, I don't know, you probably read the piece in the Times this morning about his plans.
Yes.
Basically to seize control from all these independent federal agencies, the FEC and others. He's already said, as has DeSantis, by the way, that he was going to treat the Justice Department and the FBI like any other federal agency, i.e. he'll run them. I mean, it's really sort of the doorstep to autocracy.
Yep.
But in a sense, I mean, they obviously wanted that story written because they are quoted in the story. This is one more example. And they got this target letter on Sunday. This story appeared on Tuesday morning. I think it's, you know, you can see him building the case. I'm going after them on behalf of you. And so they're going after me.
Totally. And so my question for you two experienced Democratic operatives and big political brains is let's just accept the premise.
A big political bullshit artist, but
no. Well,
let's pick brains.
Yeah, let's pick brains. Those go hand in glove.
Two things can be true at once. But anyway, go ahead.
Okay, let's accept the premise that this helps Donald Trump in the short term. It's going to be virtually impossible, if not completely impossible, for any of his Republican competitors to catch up with him. He becomes the Republican nominee. Do you believe that this makes it more likely for Joe Biden to win in a general.
Gibbs, you want to take the first swing at it?
Look, I was thinking about this yesterday in preparation for this. I mean, you're in your
heart. Wait, you prepare for this?
Yes. I was just thinking as I was driving.
When
just
did
to
that
be clear.
Happen?
Just to be clear, I was just thinking while I was driving. I mean, in your heart of hearts, you want to say, "Oh gosh," to Axe's thing, which we both have said this metaphor a lot. This idea of bricks on a load. Okay, this is just one too many. The wagon wheels fall off. Walk me through how a lot of the people that voted for him in 2020 are repulsed by what's happened since the polls closed in 2020. I mean, yes, there's been a lot of repulsive things.
I can give you a lot of arguments.
But arguments, yes, but impact on those voters. Because my point did something that happened on January 6th or after go, wow, holy, wait a minute, he's this? Wait a minute, I thought he was something totally different. I think it's a toss-up race.
I can make the argument that, yeah, some things have changed. But, Biden always likes to say, don't compare me to the Almighty, compare me to the alternative. That thing works both ways. These guys are sort of codependents. They're each counting on a binary race against each other and being able to win those. And I do think that the weight of all of this and the fact that Trump now in more explicit terms is speaking as an aspiring autocrat. And I think the reality of what it would mean, as it becomes clearer what it would mean, the American people will be the jury, okay, in Donald Trump's case, because if they elect him, he will make those cases go away. They are his get out of jail free card.
Literally.
And I think that there are a lot of Americans, there are some independent voters out there who are uncomfortable with that. Against that are the questions about Biden. And I've said this before, I can make a very straight-faced case that Biden has done a really good job under very difficult circumstances. He's got a lot of accomplishments to his credit. We just saw the NATO summit last week. At which, he has shown real leadership and in a difficult time and brought the world together. Inflation numbers are coming. There are a lot of things going on that, but that's not the question. The question that people are asking is, what's he going to be like tomorrow and the next day and a year from now and when he's 85? And so I think that makes it, what you say, a toss-up race. The question, and this is a topical question, are the third party candidates going to tip this race?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think the short answer, Dan, is that Biden has access to more voters, right? That would consider him. The question ultimately is, is the fervency of those that are supporting you. And to David's last point is, does somebody take some percentage of that? And we know, we can deal with no labels in many different ways, but if you look back, you 2016, Jill Stein didn't win any of those states, any of the sort of so-called blue wall states, but she took enough votes that conceivably, had all of those votes gone to the Democratic candidate, Hillary Clinton would have won, right?
And now you have Cornel West.
Yes, Cornel West, I think, is a more muscular.
Totally.
I think Cornel West is a more known. I watched Cornel. I don't know if you saw this, either of you guys, with Anderson last night. It was really entertaining because they're smart guys and they were going at it. But as I was listening to Cornel, who I know from, and you know him too from the Obama years, I'm thinking, this guy's gonna. Can you see, you go to Madison, Wisconsin, this guy's going to get votes in Madison, Wisconsin, in a state where Biden won by 20,000 votes. It doesn't take that much to tip these elections before you ever get to, no label. So I watched in succession Joe Manchin in, you know, flirting. Durbin called him yesterday the biggest tease in politics, which I thought was perfect.
He's been saving that, I think.
He did everything but hike up his pants to show his legs at this no labels thing in New Hampshire. But I'll probably get letters on that, huh? But
maybe.
I'm dating myself. I guess email is what you get today, right? Yeah. But and he's saying, and he clearly was opening the door to running. If those two guys were on the ballot, and it's not just a comparison between you and your alternative, but there are several alternatives, Biden has more to lose. There's just no doubt about it.
And I totally agree with you with Cornel West. I mean, you can imagine in places, you know, in does he pull off enough votes in Philadelphia to make Pennsylvania dicey? You said Madison or Milwaukee. I mean, to me, far more important.
Well, but inner city areas, but I think the campuses
too,
a big
sure.
spot for it.
Yep.
Because,
yeah.
You know, his was an indictment from the left of Biden. It's interesting. Poor Biden was getting pilloried by Manchin for going too far left and pilloried by West for being too far right, mm-hmm. which may be that he's mean that he's in the right spot, but they're going
right.
to get votes. And so the answer to your question is, despite everything, do I think Donald Trump could win if he's nominated? I think Donald Trump, I can see that. And, you know,
would he win without that third party?
I think it's harder, but, you know, it depends on how Biden's performing at that time. But, and it also depends whether people are going to focus on how much people value democracy, how much people value rule of law. Think of what it would mean to have a president who is under four separate indictments get elected. He can make all the federal indictments go away. He can't make the state indictments go away, but they will, if they follow the pattern, will defer those. So it's his get out of jail free card. But what does it say about the rule of law if by fiat the president of the United States escapes accountability? And then you get to this whole plan of his to basically take power away from independent government agencies, including the FBI and the Department of Justice. We're looking at sort of the American version of Viktor Orban at that
exactly.
point. So do people care about that? I mean, that's what we're going to find out. You know, all of us hacks, we kind of focus on the day to day, but you have to take a step back and say, what would it actually mean if this guy got reelected? And do the American people care about that? You know,
yep. I mean, he has very strategically chipped away at all of these institutions, public support for all of these institutions that used to be revered. Maybe too revered, and now because they have so many cracks in them, it'll be easier for him to just bulldozer them. And by the way, that includes us in the media. I mean, he's been quite successful at using us and making us a foil, and that's another scary thing. Not to make this all about us, but. You know.
But why not? Listen, I just want to say this. I'm doing this from a secret, undisclosed location, so I'm prepared for the Trump years. We will elude him and continue to bring truthful, factual banter week after week. Right, Gibbs? Aren't we committed?
You and I are survivalists, right? We'll just head to the woods and start a shortwave radio podcast. Yeah.
Yeah. We'll go to Whole Foods and we'll load in some provisions.
Exactly. I'll bring my electric car. So not a joke.
I love those Biden imitations. But anyway, go ahead.
But Dan, I think you hit on an interesting point, because I think it all depends on the lens with which you're looking at this. And we talked about what audience of people. I think there's going to be an audience of people that think, and there have been for a long time, that think their government isn't on their side, right? For whatever reason. And I think that you know, I mean, I think we can somewhat sometimes quickly boil this down to who's for democracy and who's not, or who's for, but in reality, I don't know that it's that clean or that binary, because I think there's a lot of people again, those are the people that he says, look, they're coming after you, but they're coming after me to come after you. And so I think it's basically saying to them, look, you've got it. The grievance chute is wide for Donald Trump, right? You can have a grievance over what he specifically has a grievance over, which my guess is prosecutors right now, but it could be a lot of different things. And that funnel, you know, is the group of access to voters that he has. And I also think too, David, you're totally right. I mean, it all depends. What we don't know is obviously a series of things that may or may not happen, but how do these candidates perform standing next to each other? Who else is on that stage? Who else is on that ballot?
We got a debate coming up on August 23rd. Why in the world would Donald Trump show up for that? I mean, I guess ego would be the answer.
No reason.
We have this ad from Chris Christie. Let's play this ad because he's clearly, knowing Trump as he is, I mean, this is from his super PAC, but they're trying to goad Trump into showing up.
We know what's in your head, Donald. Now that Chris Christie has qualified, should you show up to the debate? Because if you do, your opponents will bring up the impeachments, the indictments, bring up how you lost to Joe Biden, lost the House, lost the Senate. They will remind everyone you didn't build that big, beautiful wall and not one peso from Mexico. That instead of balancing the budget, you increased it by $6 trillion. That you never repealed Obamacare. Because that's what they'll say if you show up. Especially that guy Christie. But if you don't go, you'll be called a coward, a chicken, reduced to throwing spitballs from the sidelines. So, Donald, you need to decide. Are you a chicken or just a loser? Tell it like it is, PAC is responsible for the content of this advertising.
How'd that guy get through that script without laughing? That's what I want to know.
You know what, guys? I'm going to get the answer to that question because I want to know, and I'll let you know how many takes, because I bet it was many.
But here's the bigger question. You're Donald Trump. You're sitting there with your cheeseburger. You're watching TV. This ad comes across, and your Diet Coke. Like, what do you think? I mean, I think if I listen to this ad, I'm thinking, the hell I'm going to show up. Why should I show up? I'm 30 points ahead. I mean, am I missing something?
No, you're not. Well, maybe a little bit. And that is that Chris Christie knows the psychology of Donald Trump better than any of us. And so those buzzwords were intentional. Loser.
Yes.
Coward.
Yeah.
Chicken. And chicken, like, you know, loser goes, I mean, we're going to go deep here. Goes to his father, Fred Trump, who said, you can never be a loser.
You're the killer or a loser, is what he said.
Which is why he still hasn't admitted that he lost, because his election, which would mean he's a loser. So he's using those words to try to goad him to the stage. Before the target letter, there was a suspicion among Republicans, both in campaigns and in the party, that maybe they could convince Trump to go to the first debate, but he would probably skip the second because he can't stand the Reagan Library where it's going to be held, because they invited every Republican who's ever been born to speak there except for him, and he is very upset about that. So, you know, we'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, not a chance.
Not a chance he'll come at all?
Not a chance. No, I think, first of all, you can look at Chris Christie's FEC report and realize that his entire candidacy is built on 5 or 6 debates, right? He raised, $1 million? He's not going to be president of the United States, right? There's zero chance. And so I just don't think Trump's dumb enough to get roped into doing this debate. One, he doesn't want to give Fox the ratings. Two, he realizes he can go somewhere and create maybe as big or, counter event, a big crowd. And so I just don't, you know, and he also knows he's going to be a pincushion in that debate. And, you know, to his point, if he's got 50% and everybody else is dividing up 50%, why would he share the stage with them? I just don't think he ever goes.
Here's another reason, and I've been saying this for some time. If I'm advising him, I'm saying if you show up, you're the target. If you don't show up, you'll still be a target. But DeSantis becomes the next target because he's between you and everybody else. And so this furthers the project of deflating DeSantis, and that's good. So let's talk about DeSantis.
Before we get to that, just one quick thing, because I think that, the one thing this ad really gets wrong is this idea of the voiceover says you're going to be reduced to spitballing from the sidelines. Every Republican today is going to get asked about Donald Trump and his target letter. Okay.
Right.
He can be on Mars and he's dominating the Republican Party conversation. This idea that somehow in order to drive the narrative or the debate or the discussion, he has to show up at the debate is basically the fundamental difference as to why we have the primary right now that we do versus an election that we thought we might have going into 2023 and 2024.
Okay, let's take a break right here for a word from our sponsor and we'll be right back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
By the way, I said let's talk about DeSantis. Let me just insert something here, which is if they move forward on this January 6th case, presumably one star witness. Now, the trial probably wouldn't be for a long time, maybe not before the election, and it probably wouldn't happen if it isn't before the election. But the guy who gave, you know, significant testimony here is Mike Pence. Mm-hmm. And man, is he paying a price for that. He's still at this, as we sit here today, apparently doesn't have the signatures to get, the contributions, the number of contributors to qualify for this debate. He raised less money than Chris Christie. It's really kind of stunning how far he's fallen for, you know, a lot of people believe what he did on January 6th with it was a heroic thing. He did his, you know, duty by testifying, and he's paying a terrible price for it.
He is. The question was going in, who is he going to appeal to? Are there enough people who... we know the answer of what he wanted to do, which is I'm going to appeal to the people who like the Trump policies, but not the Trump personality and the chaos and January 6th and all of that. But I think, A, because there are so many other candidates to go for and to support other than Pence to get at that, and because he has so much baggage, which is, you know, look, the irony, the reality is kind of sad, because he did stand up. Yes, he was a Trump partner throughout the entire 4 years, but at the end,
kind of a toady.
Okay,
my words.
You're
I know.
Allowed to say that.
I know,
but at the end, he did what he needed to do. And it really is too bad. I think that is one of the many commentaries about where we are in our political system.
He made a Faustian bargain because he was in a governor's race back in 2016 that he was probably going to lose. And he made a deal with Trump to be his ambassador to the evangelical community because he had this passionate following among evangelical voters. And now Trump took that away. He's got other people nibbling away at it. By all rights, a guy like Mike Pence should be a really strong candidate in Iowa.
Right.
Because there's a large number of evangelical voters, but DeSantis is going after them. Tim Scott is going after them hard, you know, other, and Trump has his share of them. And yeah, this is how Faustian bargains end. Not well. I saw damn Yankees.
and look at his yeah, that's the second hour of the podcast. His negatives are sky high among the Republican Party. And look, you want to talk about the power of Donald Trump? He's reprogrammed the base voters into believing that Mike Pence could and should have done something on that day. And had he, that Donald Trump would still be president today. And you know, Pence was confronted with a voter in Iowa that said as much just last week. And you know, I there's just no room in on that side of the ledger for anything on this, and it's all pretty obvious. And I you know, going to be pretty stunning, as you said, David, if the most recent sitting Republican vice president doesn't even make the debate stage, when yep. people, you know, that you barely ever heard of are clearly going to be on there. I mean, the debate stage is fascinating. I don't want to get away from, the, you know, I my favorite is the governor of North Dakota who's offering you a $20 yep. gift card for a $1
donation. Why do you think Murphy's like, not here? Murphy has so many gift cards that he's took them and cashed them in, and he's on a vacation.
I thought that was pretty clever.
It's wildly clever. I don't want that person
legal.
Running. I don't want that person nominating people to run the economy if they think $1, I'll give you 20 is not the kind of bargain that I'm looking for.
You can make that kind of bargain if you've got $1 billion that you made.
Exactly. It's not your money, it's his money. On a
debate stage. So let's get to DeSantis. You know, my buddy Pat Quinn, who was the governor of Illinois the day after he was defeated, I called him and he said, well, you know how it goes. One day you're a peacock, the next day you're a feather duster. Ron DeSantis was the peacock of the fall. He was everybody's, you know, he came off this big win in Florida. He soared up in the polls, closed in on Trump. He was the guy. And meanwhile, he fashioned himself as Trumpier than Trump. But the establishment glommed onto him as kind of the insurgent of choice for the establishment to beat Trump. He raised a lot of money. And now the stories are all campaign in distress. Firing people, big burn rate. Most of his donors have maxed out. Only 14% or something were small donations. That could repeat. Like, I'm not surprised by this because I was never a big believer in the DeSantis thing. But where do you guys think he is right now? And is Robert and I experienced what it's like to get written off and then come back? After, you know, so I think it can happen. Question is, can it happen for him in this race, in this set of circumstances, given his limitations as a candidate?
It's going to be harder. I mean, I've been thinking a lot about John McCain, whose campaign I covered.
Right. Of course. He came back. He was written off.
Totally written off. But he was John McCain. And
exactly.
He had a lifetime of service and goodwill with a lot of the people who are out there voting, so it's not.
And
the
he was
same.
A pretty good performer, you know.
Very.
Yeah. I mean, yes. Better than Ron DeSantis.
In his own way. I mean, he was authentic. Let's say that he was an authentic guy. I'm sorry, Dan. I interrupted you. Go ahead.
No. Exactly. No. But they had a bloated campaign. They spent too much money. He didn't have the people he should have had running the campaign. Fired them. Got new people on and clawed his way back. But he had the constitution, small c, in his body to do that. I'm just not sure that Ron DeSantis is that guy.
We should note that this is a historic day, Gibbs.
I'm checking my watch to see what day it is.
Yes, what day is anyway? Because Ron DeSantis.
Are we allowed to say?
Ron DeSantis is going to appear this afternoon with Dana's State of the Union co-host Jake Tapper on his show, and it's really, I think, the first time that he's submitted himself. He's come out of the cocoon of right-wing yep. media and done an yep. interview with someone outside that cocoon. It's going to be really interesting to see how he handles that, because he's a pretty ornery character when he gets pressed.
I'm fascinated by how this interview is going to go, because I wonder if this isn't one of those things, Ax, you'll remember we would have these discussions, you know, where things weren't going well and you're like, you know what we need to do? We just need to do an interview and mix it up, you know? And it's like, okay, yes. What do you want to say? Well, you know, and you sort of decide you want to do an interview before you decide what your message is. I'm going to be fascinated to see at the end of this interview, what is it that we took away from what it is he said and wanted us to take away? What's the message he's using this to drive mm-hmm. that
That's
makes it
question.
Distinctive
yes.
to what he would otherwise be doing? And to me, it, and again, whether this is simply a whether this is an actual shift in strategy, which has been written as, versus, oh, okay, I'm just looking to get somebody to punk and use as my message, which quite frankly, if that is one, it's a waste of time, right? And energy, because he could punk the media whenever he wants to. That's not, you know, that's not going to be distinctive. And I think it's going to be interesting to see, you know, how Jake approaches the interview too, because, I don't think you have to be, and I'm not suggesting Jake would do this, I don't think you have to sort of throw quotes in front of him and ask him to, like, you know, demand that he explain them. I think in many ways it's giving some space to let him answer and then using adroit follow-ups to figure out sort of where he's going to go. I'm going to be fascinated. I think DeSantis writ large, David, is still in second place. That second place, though, is farther behind first place than...
And closer to third.
Right, than he was. I think the Real Clear Politics average last night was, or somebody said that, you know, he's dipped sort of below 20% in sort of the average. The FEC numbers, you know, he raised $20 million, but to your point, 70-some percent of that can't donate again. And look, let's be clear on the FEC numbers. This was the easy money quarter for a lot of people, right? Who are the people that have always backed you that are going to give you that seed money to get this started? And the real question is, do you have the capability, both in the polls and in donations, to grow that amount of money, to grow that support? And that's really the important part of this candidacy. I still don't totally understand what the strategy is for DeSantis. I think this idea of, like, I'm Trumpier than Trump,
yeah,
you just like me more, is just, I don't.
Look, his strategy to date has been, I am a more effective version of Trump. I've done a lot of the things you want me to do, and I've accomplished it in Florida because I'm not nuts.
Yeah.
And I'll do the same as president. And the hope, I think, on his part is that people will conclude, and many people in focus groups will say this, that Trump, they like Trump, but he can't win. And so we might as well go for the guy who will give us Trump and can win. And on paper, a 44-year-old guy running against Joe Biden, kind of muscular gubernatorial candidate, that would be the sort of candidate that you would want to run. But it doesn't account for the guy's personal qualities and his brittleness and so on.
Trump's prosecuted an effective race against DeSantis. He didn't let DeSantis do exactly what you just talked about, which is roll out this idea that I'm the effective Trump.
That's right.
I'm the one who moved this through one of the biggest states in the country. He sort of put his boot on his throat and never let him get up.
That's right.
And I think that's a huge, huge thing that really it put a ceiling on his ability to grow, and now it's pushing this stuff back down. I said this a couple weeks ago. We're going to see an Iowa poll in a couple of weeks or in a few weeks. Dan, please go talk to somebody at CNN and get them to do a decent Iowa poll, please. I'm so tired of, like, some pollster I've never heard of doing a national poll and us all being like, ooh, like, this race is going to be, Iowa and New Hampshire are going to have outsized impacts on this race. There's a longer period of time between Iowa and sort of Super Tuesday, if you will, than there was in 2016, which means those victories are going to matter more. And I'm dying to see Ann Seltzer's poll coming out of Iowa, which we'll get again sometime in August or September, to sort of see how real is the DeSantis. How real is he?
Yeah.
DeSantis likes to, as people like to talk about the Obama thing and compare it and say, just like Obama, you know, they're all in Iowa. The governor's leaning their way, as Trump noted, the popular governor. Some of the evangelical leaders are going his way. I mean, because if he, I mean, it's Iowa or bust for him. I mean,
yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
If they let Trump win Iowa and New Hampshire, good luck.
Right. It's over.
I think that you two know this better than most, which is the adage that you have to define yourself before others define you. And two things happened, I think, when we're going to be looking back, really looking through the rearview mirror on this. We're going to look at what happened at the beginning of the DeSantis juggernaut. One is exactly what you said, Robert, that the Trump super PAC spent a lot of money well before DeSantis even announced, talking about how horrible he is. That absolutely had an impact. And the second is what Ron DeSantis did for Ron DeSantis, which is the way that he defined himself, how people know him, is by all the things he did in Florida. And yes, that of course appeals to a lot of conservatives who are looking for the cultural issues to vote on. But there, I think that there are conservatives who say, that's not how we want to use government. What happened to keeping government out of our lives and letting people decide about a lot of these issues? And I think both of those things were very detrimental, mostly the Trump defining him detrimental. I mean, just now, you mentioned Iowa, just now, he has an ad, I think it's going to go up this week, using AI, which is a whole other discussion, because it's the first major use of AI in this campaign, to have Trump, fake Trump, AI Trump, read the Truth Social that he wrote about Kim Reynolds, the Iowa governor, which was very negative. And so he's trying to turn the tables and define Trump in a different way. But can you imagine trying to redefine Donald Trump right now?
Yeah.
Good luck.
I mean, good luck.
Gibbs and I are old enough to remember when AI meant Allen Iverson, the great Philadelphia 76ers star.
Practice?
There are two fundamental flaws, other than his own performance issues, which I think are significant. I mean, I think that Ron DeSantis presents very much like a politician. And Trump's people don't think of him as a politician. They think of him as kind of the leader of a movement. They think of him, but they don't. They think he is completely authentic, and that's not the way DeSantis presents. But there are two fundamental flaws. One is that he says that he can win and Trump can't, and in service of beating Trump, he's taking positions like the 6-week abortion ban that will make it more difficult for him to win. I mean, he's painting himself so far to the right. The second is he wants Trump to collapse, but he's unwilling to make the case against him in an overt way. So I assume Jake's first question, and we'll know by the time people hear this podcast, it will be about this target letter.
Right.
And he's going to ask you have a guy in DeSantis who's campaigning against Trump as a loser, but won't acknowledge that he lost.
Yeah. And DeSantis already over the weekend, I think, admitted that a part of the reason, it's where we started this conversation, why Donald Trump has done so well in the primary polling with Republicans is because of these indictments. And now he has another one.
Right.
Well, and to your point, David, and the reason I ask about the strategy is they're all going to get asked about
this today.
Well, I
shouldn't say that. Let me just correct the record.
Now, he may have another one.
We don't know if he has an indictment. He has a target letter. Yeah.
That could be good for a point or two.
The reason I ask about the strategy, though, is they're all going to get asked about this today, and they're all essentially going to defend Donald Trump, right? They're in a moment in which, you know, Chris Christie won't, and maybe Mike Pence won't. But nobody of stature is going to sit in there and say, and it'll be interesting to see, because if you're DeSantis, you say, look, this is one of the reasons I'm running, right? We love Donald Trump's policies. We support blah, 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 blah. But this is an indication that he can't win. That's essentially the message that not as eloquently as you outlined, Axe. But I don't know that that has a place in the, I don't see that that has. People hate it when I use the word lane here, but I don't know where that has a lane that actually is going to get people to shift from Trump into Ron DeSantis.
Okay, then let's take a break right here and we'll be right back.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
For all of heaping on Ron DeSantis, I still think he's in second place, as you said, closer to third. But I can't see among the other candidates somebody that has the type of potential staying power and or the amount of money in a super PAC to fight this out. So as we say, Ron DeSantis has had a kind of challenging 2 months. He's still the most likely, if somebody were to overtake Trump, still the most likely. As you talk about Biden, I mean, you mentioned this earlier, he had a really strong week. NATO, the inflation numbers. You know, it's going to be interesting to see in the next 2 or 3 months, does some of that, and I don't think the NATO stuff will, because I don't think that people live Ukraine, most people live it on a daily basis, but it's going to be interesting to see, do any of the economic numbers become stronger for Biden? Does his job approval become stronger as it relates to the economy now that prices have come down, now that they remove that barrier? Because I think we both think, Axe, that you know, going into the election with approval numbers like that, and particularly economic approval numbers like that, are warning signs. Doesn't mean he can't win, but warning signs.
Well, the question is whether people have their attitudes are baked in and he can't move these numbers. I mean, I really do think this is going to be largely rest on the comparative and whether this becomes something larger than just, he can't let it be a referendum campaign. I'm told by our crack producer, Hannah McDonald, that Dana has to go on the air. Is that true?
Apparently, yes, it is, because we're doing, you know, we started the podcast with the breaking news and now I have to go on the TV and talk
breaking
about
news.
It. Yeah, we're doing special coverage.
We are honored that we got you first.
Thanks for having me. Will you guys have me back? And I'll have you guys on IP. Because
We want to. I don't know if Gibbs's MSNBC contract will allow
that. Oh, right. I forgot.
We'll figure that out. But I tell you, going back many, 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 many years, watching Inside Politics, I guess it won't, you know, what time is it now? It used to be at 4 o'clock, and I just remember on
now it's noon.
It's at noon. Thanks for knowing that, Robert. It's at noon Eastern.
He's not even allowed, by the way, under his contract, to watch CNN.
He's not allowed to know about CNN.
I'm sending this to my minders at NBC and MSNBC.
It's at 12 noon Eastern, 9 o'clock Pacific on CNN.
And watch it, because it's the smartest show on politics on television. It's not as smart as podcast that called Hacks on Tap, but it's very close second.
Thanks for joining.
Great to have you.
Guys, you're the best.
See you.
Love you both.
Thanks.
Bye.
I know people anxiously await the mailbag and the new book club. We're skipping that this week, but we'll be back to them on next week's episode.
So I wanted to mention, I said earlier that we were talking about the No Labels Party. Did you get a chance to read their, they released their roadmap yesterday. Let me just say to anybody who's counting on it to get somewhere, find a different roadmap, because it was like a 72 pages of kind of fortune cookie truisms meant to offend no one. And with no solutions and nothing that would risk. And you know what it read like, and I'm not saying this is what happened. It read like Mark Penn did one of those polls where he asked 200 questions.
Yeah.
He picked the top 30 that tested well, and they used the phraseology that he used in the poll and threw it in a book and called it common sense. So they're going to have to do better if they're going to be taken seriously.
Yeah, and let's pull this apart a little bit. I mean, the idea that they basically said, look, we're not going to run a candidate unless we can win. And let's just be clear. No third party candidate's getting 270 electoral votes. The chances that whoever they nominate, if they were to run a candidate on the No Labels platform, is a 0% chance of winning. They're only going to be a spoiler candidate, as we talked about earlier. There's no chance. Joe Manchin is not winning California, right? He's not winning Texas. He's not winning Illinois. He's not winning New York. He's not winning Florida. So there's zero way.
They put out a list of like 27 states or something where they thought they could get 286 electoral votes. Illinois was on there.
Right.
I'm running to Vegas on that one.
Yeah, I was going to say.
I feel good about it.
I'm running to the drugstore to get a drug test for the person who thinks that Joe Manchin's winning Illinois. Because it's just, I mean... So, and I love Durbin's tease line, because I love Joe Manchin, who's, you know, getting probably less good at playing this role, said, look, to be clear, if I was a candidate, I would win, but I'm not sure I'm going to run. Axe, have you ever been in the room with a politician that was convinced if they ran for president, they would unequivocally win, but hadn't decided whether they wanted to be president of the United States?
Yeah. I think what's going on with Manchin is they're waiting to see how this Republican race in Wisconsin shakes out, because they think they might be able to beat
West Virginia.
Oh, West Virginia, I'm sorry. How they might want to, they feel like they can beat Alex Mooney, the right-wing congressman, but they're not sure they can beat the governor. And they're hoping, perhaps even betting that Mooney will show signs of life. But, you know, Manchin's going to have to make a decision in the early part of the, probably in January. And so he's going to have to make that calculation. But if he's making the calculation on the bet that he is going to be the next president of the United States, you're right. He should go and get that drug test.
Well, yeah. And I don't know whether, you know, look, Manchin is going to be better at West Virginia politics than either of us are ever going to be. But I do wonder, the more you flirt with this idea of running for president, to, you know, do I know that he adroitly plays this idea of, I'm not a national Democrat. I'm something very unique. I'm very West Virginia. I'm not this. I'm not that. I mean, the idea of no labels is exactly what he wants people in West Virginia to think of him. But I just don't know that flirting with this is, I don't think people are going to think, okay, my senator going to New Hampshire is helping me in West Virginia all that much. So I go back to this idea that no third party candidate's going to win. Every third party candidate's going to have to reckon with the idea that all they're there to do is spoil some amount of vote for somebody else. John Anderson, I think got what, 19? No, Perot got 19%. I forget what Anderson got in 1980. But you know, when you take those two out, you know, you just don't have a lot of third party success in this country. And, you know, I think people can tell a pollster they aren't thrilled about a Trump Biden rematch, but I don't see a lot of them looking to say, okay, I think we should vote for candidate 3 or candidate 4 or candidate 5, understanding that they're just throwing that vote away.
Yeah. I mean, the most successful third party candidate ever was, I guess, Teddy Roosevelt. I think he got 27% of the vote. I don't think he got any electoral votes. I'm going to have to check on that.
Axe, looking at the FEC numbers, the rest of the FEC numbers and sort of the positioning, you know, I posit that DeSantis is still the likeliest candidate to topple Trump if somebody does. Looking at the FEC numbers and just looking at what's happening in kind of Iowa, New Hampshire, and writ large, who else catches your attention?
Well, you know, Murphy mentioned that Nikki Haley raised a respectable amount of money, enough to keep her going for a while. Trump and DeSantis, nobody else. Yeah, and Tim Scott, came in with a lot of money. He's got enough money to run a serious campaign. And if there's a flavor of the moment on the Republican side among the establishment Republicans, it's Tim Scott. I mean, there you see people moving off of DeSantis and thinking maybe Scott can do it. And then there's, you know, people who are waiting to see if Youngkin gets off the sidelines. But, you know, nobody knocked my socks off. The thing I haven't looked at the distribution of that 72 million that Biden released. But how much was his campaign and how much was allied committees and the DNC? Do you know?
I don't know. And I'd have to look at it too, because there's money that can be transferred from the DNC through party committees. Basically, you have a joint fundraising agreement with the DNC. So you go to an event and give, say, $10,000, and the candidate gets their money and the party gets their money. So it's still Joe Biden for president.
We need to get Rube Goldberg on the next show to to just talk us through the FEC.
That's the FEC, right? Joint fundraising agreements. Yeah.
Before we go, one other note. You saw Robert Kennedy Jr., who's running in the Democratic primary on sort of Republican conspiracy theories, said last week that the COVID virus was constructed in such a way as to immunize Chinese and Ashkenazi Jews. So I said last night on CNN, I am an Ashkenazi Jew, I think 100%. And
how many times have you?
Twice. So right. As I said last night, either I'm going to have to visit 23andMe and find out if my parents lied to me and I had all those bar mitzvah lessons for nothing, or his theory is a little rickety. But that guy,
yeah,
I will say I'm surprised, though, you hear from odd places, oh, you know, he's really interesting. And he's now all of the growth in his vote is among Republicans. He's pretty popular among Republicans now, not popular among Democrats. And probably the Democrats who like him are people who revere the name as I do. But I'm sorry to see him sully the name.
Yes. And I laughed at your lead in on that. And we should just step back and take what he said extraordinarily seriously and pull it apart. I mean, it's what we're seeing on the Democratic side is that Trump, he's the Democratic Donald Trump when it comes to misinformation. And the amount of this that gets pumped into the ecosystem of our information is we are lessening the number of people that support the types of vaccines that allow children to go to school and be healthy.
The dangerousness
with which he's approaching this has to be taken seriously. I'm heartened to see both his family speak out against him. I'm heartened to see Democrats begin to speak out against him. I think from a strategy, letting him continue to talk is a politically a good thing for somebody like Joe Biden, because I think he reminds you that he's not his father every time he opens his mouth. The danger of when he opens his mouth and covering it is that it is going to fall on some amount of ears that believe it.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's, you know, again, for us that, you know, that looked at his father and his uncles and were inspired by what politics and public service could do, it is sometimes the apple does fall far from the tree, Ax. And in this case, you know, this is a guy who was, you know, 15, 20 years ago thought of as
a great environmentalist. Yes. And
a legitimate candidate for the U.S. Senate out of a place like New York. So,
yeah.
But a dangerous spewing of misinformation. And I think this one quickly jumped over the line. And, I think the idea that he's going to get flirted with all that much now is much less so than it might have been 2 or 3 weeks ago, mm-hmm. when, you know, he seemed just as you said, an alternative with a fabulous Democratic last name.
And with that, Gibbs, always good to be with you, brother.
Always good to be with you.
Great to have Dana. We got to get her back. And there's the great Pageant of Democracy rolls on here. We're going to have a lot to talk about in the coming weeks. So see you soon.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.